Anyone who's ever owned a cat will tell you, while rewarding, trying to coexist with the animal can be a tricky and occasionally frustrating experience. Everyone wants to make their cat happy, but despite owners' best intentions, their homes are often not tuned into the cat's natural instincts, and that can lead to some problems.
And that's where our next guest comes in. He says there are plenty of ways to design your home to meet your cat's needs, all while retaining your personal style and not getting stuck with the label of crazy cat person from your friends and family.
We're joined now by Jackson Galaxy. He's a cat behaviorist and the host of Animal Planet's My Cat from Hell. He's the co-author of the new book, Catification, Designing a Happy and Stylish Home for Your Cat and You. He'll also be giving a talk in Milwaukee this Sunday at 7 at the Pabst Theater. Jackson, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so, you know, I've had cats. Sharing a living space with a cat can be a lot of fun or a lot of stress, maybe both. How important is it to design a space that works for the two- and the four-legged creature?
Surprisingly, it's not as hard as you think it is because, you know, first of all, it is about making your cat happy. It is about giving them access to the world that they want to be a part of, which specifically is the vertical world. They want to get up there and they want to explore and they want to let their raw cat out. But we have in the past associated that need and that desire on their part with having our house look like the quote crazy cat lady house, you know, and what we're here to say is no, you can really make it appealing to you and your cat at the same time, and it won't take that much money or time, just imagination, a little bit of dedication.
Well, before we get into the layout, you say we first need to understand our cat's behavior and the concept of the raw cat. What do you mean by
yeah.
that?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, as much as I hate to generalize about, you know, all cats, because, you know, I want to rob them of their individuality, it's like, you know, there is still that big cloud which the cat snowflake falls from, you know, and that cloud is what I call the raw cat. The raw cat is the hunter, is the one who wakes up and says, I got to go kill things. That's what I do. This is what I'm on the planet to do, is hunt, catch, kill, eat, groom, and sleep. That's what I'm here for. And if we just find a quote-unquote civilized way to entertain that need, we make for a much more vital, stable, and present cat.
So how does our living space, our layout, interact with that raw cat? What are some things that could go wrong or right?
Well, you know, one of the things is that you know, what I call cat mojo, which is, you know, cats finding their, you know, that thing that just makes them go, that's right, I'm here. And that's all about territorial ownership and the security they feel in ownership. So the simple part of catification is putting down what I call scent soakers. Scent soakers can be anything from a fleece bed, a piece of sisal matting, you know, anything where they sit on it, their scent is transferred to it, and they go. And when they walk by it again, they go, yeah, that's mine, you know. And those are very simple things. You know, one of the best things that we highlight in the book is the concept of cat TV. You put a fleece bed that's made for windowsills right in your window. Your cat spends much of their day looking out that window, and they're still the raw cat at work, passive engagement. They're still watching birds. They're still looking at the world with intent. And then if we double down on that and give them scent soaking and cat TV, man, that's a happy cat.
And you talk in the book about cats who tend to be recluses, and you make the distinction between providing a cave versus providing a cocoon for a cat. What's the difference?
Well, you know, the cats that I call cavers, that other people would call scaredy cats, those are the ones who, you know, you're thinking, well, where do they prefer to be? Well, if you thought, you know, what my cat prefers to be under the bed or in the closet, that's not what I would call dwelling. They're not a cave dweller. They're actually trying to disappear, be small, not be a part of the world. And part of what we want to do to make our cats the best version of themselves as they can be is to constantly challenge them in a way that's not, you know, paralyzingly scary for them. So cocoons are sort of, you know, portable caves. We can take something that is a covered bed and move it out of the closet into the middle of the room. They can have confidence and ownership and still be covered at the same time. So we are working with them. We are telling them on the other side of this challenge line is a much more fulfilling life, but we're not going to throw you into that challenge ice bath at the same time. It's a transitional piece of furniture.
So when we look at an antisocial cat and think, oh, that's just a cat being a cat, that's not quite right.
Right, exactly. Listen, and I don't think it's a stretch anymore when we compare our four-legged children to our two-legged children. If your child spends most of their life locked in their room, you get concerned. You know that they need social experiences. You know they need to go out there, cross that challenge line, become part of the world, and because it makes for a better version of that child, the best they can be. Same thing with the cats. It's not good enough anymore to say, well, that's just who they are.
Well, speaking of observing that reclusive cat in its cave under a bed or something, before we get to more specific tips again, you say before we go out and buy the cat tree or put up a cat shelf or do any kind of redesign, we need to observe our cat's behavior. What are the cues we should be watching for?
Yeah, you know, the thing that I really tried to impress in the first part of the book is, you know, you are an interior designer. Your cat is your client. So when they walk into a room, what's the first thing that your cat does? You know, I'm just watching a cat walk into the room right now. The second they walk in, they're looking up at the ceiling. Great. I know who you are right now. You're a tree dweller, and I need to be able to get you up to that part of the world safely so that you can find your mojo up there. It's all it is. It's you know, they are showing you what makes them confident. All you got to do is cater to that just a little bit, and you'll see the difference immediately.
Well, let's get into some design ideas for meeting that. I think you called it verticality earlier. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. you can go out and buy a cat tree. That's one way to go. But your book is full of a lot of other vertical solutions. What are some things we might consider?
Well, you know, the thing that I want everyone to think about, take a look around your living room and think about making your cat superhighway. And the cat superhighway is above the ground. So you do have a lane of highway on the ground. That's great. But cats see the world in three dimensions. And every time that you can build another layer of racetrack around that room without them touching the floor, you win, especially in a multi-cat household, in a household where you've got dogs and cats and kids. It just makes for a lot more peace. So start looking around the room. Yes, you can have a hub, which might be a cat tree. But from there, where can they go to get around the room? Sure, you can clean off a part of your mantle and put a bed up there. Great. You just got it going on. Now, from there, can they go to the bookcase, to the TV console, down onto the couch, and then onto the floor? Just use your imagination. I think that a lot of times there's paralysis by analysis where we think, oh, all the money and the time I got to spend and everything. No, you don't have to. Just look around your room, use your imagination, and just, you know, no excuses. Catify.
And I think it's often a battle for people trying to keep the cat off of the shelf, table, whatever piece of furniture you want. It sounds like you're saying compromise. Give them some of their own spots, and that should do the job?
Yeah, listen, one thing that we have to recognize about living with cats is that successfully navigating that world is about embracing compromise. You just have to. They're not going to do anything that doesn't work for them. So if you are going to say no to your cat, there's got to be a yes behind that no. You don't want them scratching on your sofa? Fine, you can say no. You can put double-sided sticky tape on the arm of that couch, but they need to scratch. They need to own that territory. They need to exercise, and they need to shed their claws. So you put something right next to it, acknowledging that it's a really important territorial area, and say, yeah, you can scratch right here, just not on this thing.
Now, you mentioned the mixed household, to quote Ghostbusters, dogs and cats living together. What are some other design ideas to help navigate the likely conflict there?
Well, you know, one of the things that we highlight in the book is the concept of not only seeing yourself as an interior designer, but seeing yourself as a traffic planner. There's different types of cats that I highlight in the book. One that just loves to just barrel down the middle of the floor. All right, well, if they're going to be what I call a beach dweller, which means they sit in the middle of the floor, they make you step over them, it's okay to let them own that area. But that means if you have other cats, you got to build some highway around there. So you've got traffic circles. You've got ways for the cats to navigate one another without getting into that area where instead of a cat superhighway, you've got like the one-lane dirt road, and then you've got, you know, the police car and the milk truck coming at each other, and one of them is going to wind up in the ditch. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where you're just always thinking about the flow of traffic. And again, if you're looking at the flow of traffic and you think that you can use from floor to ceiling to control that traffic, it becomes a lot more doable.
We're talking to cat behaviorist Jackson Galaxy about how to create a functional and stylish living space for you and your cat. His new book is called Catification, about the ways that you can beat cat behavior problems by compromising and designing just a little bit better. We're talking with cat behaviorist Jackson Galaxy about how to create a functional and stylish living space for you and your cat or cats. And you can share your questions, your experiences at 800-642-1234.
That's right. How have you designed your space around your cat while making it work for you and your family as well? Has your cat already carved out a spot for itself in your home, whether you planned it or not? And what questions do you still have, even though you've owned cats for a long time, what questions do you still have about the relationship between cats and your house? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Jackson, before we go to our callers, on a serious note, this could be something, a little redesign could make the difference between somebody keeping a cat and a cat ending up at a shelter if we can solve a behavior problem with redesign.
Absolutely. That's why I work this job. You know, I spent 10 years myself working in the shelter system. I continue to work with shelters every day of my life, and it is my goal to make sure that cats stay in homes, that cats get homes, and everything I do, including catification, is about meeting that end game of none of them being homeless. And I really do believe that making sure, now, you know, catifying is just part of it. You know, it's also, if you know your cat to the point where you can understand their territorial needs and cater to them, that bond that you have between you and your cat deepens, you know, exponentially. And the thought of, quote, getting rid of them becomes more and more remote as they become more family. And that's my goal.
We'll go to a caller now at 800-642-1234 with Dan in Mequonago. Dan, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
What's your question?
Well, first, I just want to say, Jackson, I watch your show all the time. I can't wait to read your book. You're totally awesome, and I love your style.
Oh, thanks so much, man.
I have four cats, and they all get along pretty well. I have one female, though, that's kind of secluded. She has her own little spot, and we've got, like, a nice ramp going from the, not a real ramp, fictional ramp, like from the TV stand to the computer tables up to the dresser, and she hangs out there. But we've got a male cat that's, he's really nice. He snuggles with us all the time, and he really, really wants to just hang out with her, but she's having none of it. And they get into huge fights all the time because of that. He just follows her up there. Any suggestions on how to help them adjust to each other?
Well, one of the things that you want to make sure of, you know, when we talk about the cat superhighway, the one cardinal rule is no dead ends. No dead ends, because if there's a dead end in that highway, that's where the cars or the cats start to pile up. So if you look where these fights tend to happen, she has this resting place, the other guy comes up there, and kaboom, we have a fight. And often it's because that she doesn't have an alternate exit route. She just has that one way that she gets up and down. If you make sure that there are alternate exit routes all over that place, not just a front door and a back door, but a side door as well, it's going to lessen that impulse that she has, which is fight or flight. I'm cornered, and I will have to, you know, fight my way out of this. And that's really the first best way to make sure that you're allowing them to have this dialogue of, hey, I want to be around you, and hey, I'd rather if you weren't, without the threat of kill or be killed.
And you're right, Jackson. I think that one of the first thing cats look for when they come into a room is escape routes. So even if we're talking about just one cat, they're going to feel happier if they have another way to get out of a place.
Right. Well, you know, again, when we're talking about the raw cat, we're talking about that cat who out in the wild is smack dab in the middle of the food chain. They are amazing hunters, but they're also being predated upon at the same time. So they're always, when they're scouring, looking for prey, they're also looking for a way out. They're always looking for that. So when you allow your cat to walk in the room and go, yep, there, okay, there, can get, okay, then they gain confidence, they gain mojo, and that's something we should give to them right off the bat.
Dan, thanks for the call, and good luck. We'll go to Gloria in Chippewa Falls now. Gloria, hi.
Hi. My question is, we have five cats, and we're getting ready to move from a larger house into a smaller house. It has about the same number of rooms, but what can we do to make it more comfortable with for them since it is smaller? And does having the same number of rooms make that big of a difference?
No, you know, as we've been talking about this whole time, Gloria, it's about verticality. It's about making sure that you are looking at that room or all of those rooms as your cats are, from floor to ceiling. And if you create lanes of traffic that go as low as you can, as high as you can, going from floor level, coffee table height, couch height, console height, and beyond, those five cats will use that territory in the same way they've used the horizontal territory in the past. It's almost as if you have a ranch-style home and you have popped the top on that home. Suddenly, you have that feeling that you can breathe territorially, and that's what your cats are going to feel as well. So before you guys move in there, and I think this book is really going to be helpful for you guys as well, to just take a fresh look at it the way your cats would look at it and just start providing that space before they even get in there. And that I think, is really it's that little over-the-top helper, is to make sure that when they inhabit that space, it's so they walk in the room, they look up, they look down, they look all around, and they think of escape routes, resting spots, things like that. And that will allow them to discover the space without getting in each other's hair.
Thanks a lot for the call, Gloria. Before we get back to callers, Jackson, your book is full of a lot of different home do-it-yourself type projects. Could you give us an example? Maybe I think you've got a cat hammock in there.
Yeah, we have a lot of projects in the book. Kate Benjamin, my co-author, is really great at building something out of nothing, and the cat hammock is a perfect example. Basically, what we're telling you guys is if you got a cardboard box, you can cut windows out of that box and take a nice piece of fabric that, as I've talked about before, is a scent soaker, and through just a little bit of tying some knots, you can make a hammock for your cat out of a box. Again, we are big into no excuses catification. If you don't have the money, there we go. If you don't have the time, there you go. None of this is tough. The do-it-yourself hammock will literally take you 20 minutes, half hour. That's it, as long as you have the materials. So the catification is just full of projects like that.
Back to our callers now. We've got Naomi on the line in Milwaukee. Naomi, hi.
Hi. I love your show, Jackson. I take your advice quite often. I have three cats of my own. And my question is, I have one blind cat. She's 12 years old. And I'm trying to integrate her into the rest of the apartment with my two other cats. But unfortunately, my most dominant cat is the kind of cat that lays on the ground a lot. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for how we can help them have their own spaces in the house.
Well, that sounds like a tough one, Jackson.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for what you said. And secondly, thank you so much for adopting a blind cat. We need more people like you out there who know that just because they're blind doesn't make them less of a cat. So thank you for that. And the third thing is, you know, it's tougher for sure. You know, one of the things that has actually, I mean, this is, sounds like the simplest, most obvious thing, and it's so simple it couldn't work. Putting a bell on the collar of the beach dweller, the cat that we're talking about, is kind of important. You got to give your blind cat every advantage that they can have territorially, and that bell is a big deal. If they can hear that cat coming, that's a big deal. Don't forget, your blind cat can actually smell a whole lot better than another cat. You know, it's like for me, for instance, I'm deaf in one ear. My smeller is off the charts, man. And that's, you know, all people with deficiencies in one area, and cats can, you know, compensate with their other senses. So your blind cat can smell your beach dweller quite a ways away. So don't think that they're walking into a trap every time they walk into a room. But the last thing that you can do is through clicker training, through positive reinforcement training, you can teach your cat through using clicker and treats, the blind cat just as well as any other sighted cat, to get them around the room, to get them to navigate the furniture and the entire perimeter with confidence by just creating sort of a very gentle agility course, for lack of a better word. And once you've done that, the last thing is don't move the furniture. You know, once you've set that world up for your blind cat, anytime you move anything, you either have to, you know, show them again that this is how we get around the world. But, you know, that's it's a given. You know, actually, I'm thinking of one more thing. this, and we use it in the book. It's a concept I call the diffusion post. If you put a tall cat tower, scratcher, anything like that, in the dead center middle of the room, it acts as like a traffic circle around that room. So you go exactly where your beach dweller likes to sit, put a piece of furniture right there, and then that forces your beach dweller to actually move around that post, and also your blind cat will move around that post, and it creates flow, where right now the problem is that the beach dweller creates territorial static, and this way you can break up that static a little bit.
All right. Well, a lot of advice there for you, Naomi. Good luck in navigating that and helping your blind cat navigate your household. Jackson, before we're done, are we in a kind of a cat renaissance? It seems like there's a cat boom in pop culture, your show being part of that in your book.
Yeah, well, I would hope so. I mean, I'm banking on it. I mean, I really, you know, part of my goal, of course, is to elevate the cat. You know, we have over 90 million cats in American homes right now, as compared to 60 million or so dogs. And so they are the most popular companion animal that we have, and yet they don't get the kind of love and respect as dogs do. My goal through catification, and honestly everything else I do, is if you know what they're thinking, if you know how they think, and you know the depth of their emotional world, you will appreciate them more. You will actually be able to interact with them more, and will elevate them to that place where dogs occupy. I think we're getting there, honestly.
Jackson, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, my pleasure, guys.
That was cat behaviorist and My Cat from Hell host Jackson Galaxy. He's the co-author of the new book, Catification, Designing a Happy and Stylish Home for Your Cat and You. He'll be giving a talk in Milwaukee Sunday at the Pabst Theater.